Welcome to Off the 99, a weekly radio show about news, politics, and all things Merced, brought to you by the Merced Sun Star and KYOS. I'm your host, Amira Butt, along with my co-host, Mike North, and this is Off the 99. This week on Off the 99, reporter Mike North spoke with Joe Pruzzo, CEO of Castle Air Museum, and John Sundgren, Board of Directors Chairman for the museum, in honor of Castle Air Museum's 30th anniversary Sunday. Located minutes from Merced in Atwater, the museum houses planes used in several wars, including the Korean War, Vietnam, and World War II, like the B-17 Flying Fortress, the B-24 Liberator, the F-14 Tomcat, and SR-71 Blackbird. The museum is having its open house from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday.
Reporter Amira Butt spoke with Mark Hendrickson, Director of Commerce, Aviation, and Economic Development for Merced County, on how the Castle area has changed since the Air Force Base closed in 1995.
We're responsible for the collection, maintaining the facilities and the collection, because the airplanes, for the most part, belong to either the Navy Museum or the Air Force Museum.
Okay.
Just a few of them.
And they're kind of like on a lease here, right? It's more of like a permanent loan.
It's like a permanent loan. But every year we have to do an inventory and send photos of the airplanes.
Make sure they're not rusting away, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
there's a lot of work involved. It's not like these are just sitting out here and that's it. There's a lot of maintenance and constant upkeep.
Yeah. With as much as we try to promote the museum and be in the media and advertise, there are people, shockingly, still here within a mile that drive by here, never been here. And I've had people, when we put up the electronic sign about 3 years ago, come in and say, "I didn't realize this was a museum. The Air Force left these planes out."
Well, a lot of people think we're still supported by the Air Force.
Yeah.
Those ties were totally cut a long time ago.
Oh,
I mean, 1995 they were cut.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Do you guys collect money, too, in trying to raise funds to bring in new planes?
Yeah.
Okay.
We do fundraisers. Recently received a substantial endowment donation and another donation to the restoration side of the house.
Is that where most of the money comes from, is from donations? I can't imagine you're getting very much money from
memberships.
Admissions.
We have about 2,100 members total, and those range from an individual membership for $30 to a general Castle membership, which was an accumulated total of $25,000.
And that's probably a lifetime.
Oh,
yeah, right there. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And people don't realize, they think, the Air Force or the Navy, whoever gives you an airplane, they don't realize that we as a private foundation have to bear the cost of retrieving it, bringing it here, transporting it, restoring it, and maintaining it.
So, I mean, how important is this for local school children or historians to come and be able to see these planes? And you see them in photos and you hear about them and you see them in video games, but to actually come out here and be able to stand underneath them, basically.
Puts it into a whole different perspective.
Yeah, this is where they trained all the B-52 crews.
Right here?
35 crews.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That was Castle's mission.
Okay.
Some of the airplanes that we have are very rare, like the B-36, the RB-36. It's one of four.
One of four and the only reconnaissance version of
existence. Yeah. Okay.
The rarity is what a lot of people come to see. Another one out there, the B-45, the Vulcan, the B-24. When you go back in the day, over 18,000 were produced of the B-24.
Mm-hmm.
Today, there may be 15 or 16 in existence.
Right.
They all went to smelters after the war, and nobody wanted any.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's it gives you a real good perspective about how aviation has developed over the years, and it goes from being a B-17, B-24 mass bombing campaign to now you have fighters that carry more weapons than those could carry. It's a bit eclectic, I think,
I think
because
so too.
We we don't have just a particular theme to the airplanes, and
right.
we have transports.
Well, that's
cargo
a good thing. You get everything when you come here.
Right.
Yeah.
We, on an average day, any day of the week, I can pick it. I can walk up. Well, just this morning, I was on the grounds.
Yeah.
Early, and there was a couple with an accent. I believe it sounded like French.
Yeah, people come from all around the
all
world.
All over the world.
Yeah.
We're renowned all over the world because of the eclectic collection.
Yeah.
And because this is maybe the first time they've ever been able to see a B-36 or a Vulcan or an SR-71 up close and personal.
And you probably get, you know, old veterans coming in here that maybe fought in foreign wars, and they're seeing these planes up close that they were fighting against.
You know, it touched me one day because there was an elderly gentleman and his son and grandkids, and all of a sudden you could see, you know, the story was being passed, you know, grandpa did this,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, really, you know, and it really got a lot of interest when it's in the children. It really falls to us in a mission to educate as well.
And that's why they're bringing them here, you know, they're getting that education,
right,
maybe something that they missed, you guys kind of pick
up.
And
not only historical, but even in a technological sense, like John was saying,
mm-hmm.
how do we get from fabric airplane with wood struts to a SR-71? There's got to be some
in a pretty short period of time.
Exactly.
I mean, you think about it from when planes first came about.
40 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable how much technology advances.
Yeah.
So many of these planes, they were the top of the line 1 year, and then a few years later, it's like they're kind of out of commission.
Definitely. You know, a lot of people will say, well, gee, how come you don't have any World War II fighters? Well, unfortunately, the World War II fighters fell into the hands of a lot of collectors flying them, and, you know, something that Uncle Sam paid $50,000 a copy for in 1945 goes for $2 million now.
Yeah.
There's no way a nonprofit like us could afford that. What I love, too, is he was a former RAF officer, and he brought his logbook because he flew that Vulcan out there, and he wanted to see it and show his wife. So we opened it up for him. You know,
the actual pilot of that Vulcan
was
here.
Yeah, he had long time on the airplane.
Wow.
I don't know how many hundreds of hours. But
you better make sure you're keeping him in shape, otherwise you're going to get somebody coming in and getting upset with you.
No, we do. We try to be as particular as we can.
Yeah.
You know,
the maintenance, we have, every airplane has a crew chief. Well, there's some out there that are lacking a crew chief right now. But
most of them have one.
The crew chiefs are responsible for routine, you know, grounds cleanup and washing. And and then if they have a problem, so there's a panel that's falling off or something that's beyond their capabilities, then they notify our line chief, the guy in charge of the crew chiefs, and they get together with restoration and they fix it.
Okay, and they're in there for the open cockpit days, most of them, too?
Yeah, and they're the ones
showing
that open
people
up
around
the airplanes and do the
They know the
inside
history of the plane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're all volunteers.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to have the volunteer base that we have, as not only in crew chiefs, but, you know, the restoration expertise is phenomenal. I mean, I've seen some things come in here that are pretty ragged, and they turn out what we have on the ground.
You know, most of them did that kind of work for a living, and now that they're maybe retired, they're doing it. So
a lot
just,
of them did, but we picked up new volunteers that, in some cases, were never near an aircraft. And what's really beautiful is they're mentored under these guys.
So it gets passed down.
And it's passed down. They're producing work as good, in some cases better, as the guys that taught them. So I can't illustrate how fortunate we are with that.
Right.
Yeah, there's always saying, well, why don't we partner with a school someplace and they can bring these young kids in and we can teach them a trade.
Yeah.
But we're dealing with volunteers. They work Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and if they have something else to do, they don't, you know.
Yeah.
So it's very it would be nice.
It's not like they're paid teachers.
And then how do you credential it and all of that?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
But we certainly like volunteers. And you know, it's a common joke, says, well, next year we'll give you 100% raise.
Yeah.
Let her zero your check.
Well, for me, I wasn't involved with the museum till about 5 years ago, and I just volunteered to be a tour guide because I thought it would be a kick. Just to be a tour guide.
Yeah.
And then they realized how gullible I was. So, and being a tour guide was fun.
Yeah.
It is a blast.
Oh, yeah.
You always have the kid that's on rave or you know,
mm-hmm.
the know-it-all or what have you. But and tours with older people are really, they can drag out all day long.
Right.
They
and they probably all really take an interest in
yeah.
what's
and
out
they,
there.
Right.
Well, you know, I've been on some tours. Sometimes I'll just take a tour, you know, to take, you know, some load off. And
yeah.
When they start asking a lot of questions, you know you got their attention.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, well, what's this? Well, what's that? And you start telling them, oh, my God, how does this thing get off the ground? Well,
yeah.
It's kind of like physics, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's kind of thinking, you go to some museums, and maybe you get bored at some, kids will get bored at some
yeah.
museums.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get bored out here. There's
yeah.
You can't help but take interest and kind of imagine what these planes were going through.
Well, you know, one of our, recent arrivals, gosh, 5 years ago that F-14 came in, or five and a half, but it was over downtown Baghdad in 2004. You know,
mm-hmm.
We found out one of our transport airplanes, the C-46, the commando, was damaged by German anti-aircraft fire over the Rhine, dropping troops in early 1945.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, you know.
Yeah.
Boy, and nobody realized that they had C-46s
in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until then, we were actually contacted by a curator, conservator in Great Britain, doing research on that.
Okay.
And he said, you know, 180 of that type of airplane came to Great Britain, and yours is the only survivor of all those.
Oh wow!
And then
whoa.
We find out that the pilot is still alive.
Huh.
He's in Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And they did some more research, and he had never gotten the Distinguished Flying Cross
right.
or whatever for his, because he did some pretty heroic things
right.
to fly the mission and get the airplane back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the whole story is downstairs, and I can print you out a copy of it. Well, he finally got, it was actually upgraded to a Silver Star.
Yeah, I think in 2007 or 8.
So and the guy's picture is downstairs.
So this is like a historical record here, and at the same time, when you're bringing in a plane, you don't always know all the history of that plane. You sometimes learn more about it
right.
later
yeah.
on down the road.
Yeah, and we have, you know, some of our restoration volunteers, you know, as part of the restoration, really get, there's that tail number in this type of airplane. Let's find a history on it. And case in point, you know, this is the 100th anniversary of naval aviation this year. Kind of appropriate, we're bringing out a very historical Navy jet. It's an RF-8 Crusader, which Vietnam era, early Vietnam
it's,
era.
It's not out there right now?
No.
Was that the one that was in the hangar when we
right,
put that?
When
okay.
you did the
8th
yeah.
right.
Yeah. It flew Cuban Missile Crisis. It
okay.
flew reconnaissance
yeah.
over Cuba.
It was a multi-use plane, wasn't it?
The F-8 and then the RF-8. The F-8
oh.
was an air defense airplane.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was a fighter. It didn't do any bombing. I actually, that's another story.
They did, especially for you.
But so the RF-8s were used for reconnaissance, and the
okay.
F-8s were used for fleet air defense.
Mm-hmm.
They were and for like MIGCAP, that sort of thing.
Right.
Combat air patrol, MIGCAP, MIG combat air patrol. It's where they flew fighters equipped with nothing but air-to-air weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
Would cover for the fighters that were carrying hard bombs.
Okay.
For bombing.
Gotcha.
Okay. So if the MiGs came up, this is in Vietnam, if the MiGs came up, then the air-to-air guys would break them up and chase them away or shoot
huh.
them down. Same sort of thing in World War II with the B-17s, the waves of bombers, and then
yeah.
the P-51 was flying cover for them.
Okay. So in case somebody came and tried to shoot
yeah.
down, they'd
mm-hmm.
you'd have fighters there to
yeah.
take it
right.
out. Okay.
So.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we're actually going to have five Navy airplanes
yeah.
here in the next within within the next couple years.
Yes.
We just brought in an RA-3, which is a medium bomber aircraft, actually, that landed on carrier.
Okay.
I can't believe it. I don't know. It's huge.
So we're still bringing in planes to this museum.
Yes.
And is there a lot of room to expand out there? It seems like it's, you know, pretty filled, just, you know, from looking at it.
Well, yeah, we've got a fair amount of room yet for those, you know, types of airplanes. If they're bigger airplanes, you know, they eat up real estate quicker. But
yet
there are some bigger airplanes that are on our wish list.
Mm-hmm.
Bombers, you know.
B-1.
B-52G, H.
So how many of these planes actually flew out from this base? Did any of them fly out of here?
The tanker did.
The tanker did?
Yeah, the tanker was retired in January of 93 on the flight line out here.
So it just stayed out here?
Yeah.
That's an easy one then, huh?
Yeah. The T-33, that was retired with the 84th, and it was towed over here. And then... 106 flew out of here, yes, it did with the 84th and then the 456, yeah.
Okay.
F-106 did, the one we actually have. I think the B-52 did at one time, too, during its life cycle.
Yeah. During the Vietnam War, Castle did, difference training.
Oh, was it RTU?
Yeah.
Replacement training unit or something like that, yeah.
Training pilots?
Yeah.
The D model is an older version. It has a lot more capability of carrying weapons, right, bomb bay size.
Right.
And most of the B-52s that SAC has, Strategic Air Command, were the G models. And there's enough difference between the D and the G that they would have to bring, if they wanted, you know, they would send 179-day temporary duty. they would send the crews here, and they would get difference training, and then they would go on to Thailand or Guam and fly combat missions.
Okay. Did all bases like this one have training people on staff like that, or was that kind of special to this one?
Special to this one.
Okay.
This was the schoolhouse. We had the academic squadron, where they did all of the ground training. We had the simulators, where we did cockpit procedure trainers and actual simulators. And then when they got to the flight line phase, they would come down. The squadron I was in was all instructors.
Okay.
Instructor pilots, instructor navs, instructor booms. And we would pick up a crew and take them through.
So there were those aren't out here anymore, are they?
No.
That'd be a kick
in
the pants. You get a lot more people coming out here.
I wish we had one of those linebacker full motion simulators. those were a blast.
So, but that was the, and then the B-52 squadron here had the same mission. It was just a training squadron.
Okay.
Now you go to a tactical unit or an operational unit. They were on strategic alert during, this was Cold War days. And they, within a squadron, you would have some instructor pilots, instructor navs, but only a few. And here it was, everybody was an instructor.
Right.
Yeah. And you had, you know, the B-52s, the KC-135s, and for a good amount of time, you had a fighter squadron down at the south end or east, southeast end of the field, you know, with the F-106s. And then later on, they had a detachment of F-15s that would come down from, I think, McCord.
I was taking a tour with Mark Hendrickson, and he was showing me an airstrip out there, kind of a short one. It was like a scrambling thing, something with the Cold War. The Christmas tree,
It'd be parked in a kind of a Christmas tree, and out you rolled.
Yeah, so that was just in case the West Coast got attacked by...
Well...
just precautionary.
The tankers and the bombers sat what they call hard alert. 24/7, 365 days a year.
Okay.
And you had various stages of readiness from being just normal alert to being in cockpit, engines running. And I was stationed in New Hampshire, and there were Soviet missile subs. And when they came in to a certain place, then we went under a restricted alert because we didn't have the response time. And it was basically to launch and go to war. You know, it drug out over the years, and there were a few tense moments, but tell you what, I remember when Reagan said, tear down this wall, and when not all of that happened, that basically, speaking as a SAC alert crew member, it really gave me some reward for having spent several years of my life on alert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That we won the Cold War. Because without that nuclear force deterrent,
That would never happen.
That was our job. Now, Amir, you spoke with Mark Hendrickson, who had a lot to say about the museum's legacy and also the potential of Castle Commerce Center, which came about after the Air Force Base closed, right?
Yes, that's right. Let's see what he had to say.
My name is Mark Hendrickson. I'm the Director of Commerce, Aviation, and Economic Development for Merced County.
Okay, so hi, Mark. Since the base is closed in 1995, how has the Castle area changed and developed?
But, you know, of course, you know, with Castle's closure in 1995, you know, we as a community have certainly faced a number of extraordinary challenges. And, you know, and with that, though, you know, prospectively, it also provides us with a number of unique opportunities. And so we're going to continue, and we're working very, very hard to work towards, you know, at some point in the future, full reutilization of Castle. But, you know, we as a community have so many, you know, great things to be proud of. And, you know, obviously the communities of Atwater and Merced are doing incredibly, you know, wonderful things trying to improve the area for residents.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think you've got to give a lot of credit to both of those respective local governments for bringing new types of opportunities to the area. Obviously, most recently as yesterday, I think you have to compliment, as was reported in the newspaper this morning, you know, the grand opening of the Super Walmart in Atwater.
Right.
Those projects are not easy to come by, and it's a lot of hard work, and that's where the city of Atwater in particular, that project deserves a lot of credit.
And when you said challenges, what do you mean by that? As well as opportunities, I'm assuming you mean, like, for
example, absolutely. You know, with regard to challenges, of course, you know, for many, many years, we have been trying to deal with with an unemployment situation that is much more significant than most areas in California, and in fact, most areas across the country. So that's certainly a challenge. And of course, I think as everyone is very well aware, you know, this area in particular, today's era, you know, we're currently challenged, obviously, with a pretty significant foreclosure issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, all that being said, you know, we've got folks throughout our community who are making very difficult choices. You know, choices of, you know, do we put food on the table or do we pay our utility bills? And in that respect, it just underscores the point that, you know, we've got a lot of folks throughout our community who do face the most trying of times.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, you know, where do the opportunities exist? And you know, just to take a look at Castle as just a you know, just as one example of probably many that we could probably point to throughout the community, you know, a place like Castle where
mm-hmm.
you've got you know, from my standpoint, it's a very logical location, you know, from which to concentrate growth and development. It's a place where, you know, the environmental community and the development community and the agricultural community can all coalesce and
right.
try to turn it into something much more productive than what it's been over the last few years. And I think we're starting to make some strides in that regard. And so we're excited about that, but, you know, the hard work is still ahead of us.
Right, and where do you see that area changing or expanding in the next, say, 5 years?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, and I don't know that I'm going to have a great answer for you. I think as it relates to Castle specifically, I think what we're going to see is we're going to continue to see, hopefully, you know, continued federal investment with us and helping us transition, you know, our airport from what was a former military industrial type of airport to a commercial enterprise, and that's a
right.
good thing, especially as we try to position ourselves as being a facility from which to ship you know, cargo around the globe.
Right.
It's not too often that you've got an asset like our county has
mm-hmm.
with the airport, and so that's important. But I think that, you know, what we're going to continue to see, I think, on a much broader scale, you know, kind of countywide, mm-hmm. Is I think you're going to continue to see, you great strides being made in places like Los Banos, taking advantage of proximity to the I-5 corridor.
Right.
I think you're going to see places like Atwater and Merced, and you got to give great credit to really all of our local governments throughout the county for the work that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take a look at Merced in particular. I think you're going to continue to see growth and development towards the university, because the university is such a major influence on really economic development prospectively, with the type of industries and technologies that they are already helping facilitate and opening doors for us down the road. So that's where I think we can maybe expect to see things in a few years. But I think we all need to be mindful that it takes time.
Right.
And we, as much as all of us want to see jobs created tomorrow, the reality is that we have to continue to build that foundation.
Okay. And so Castle Air Museum is celebrating its 30th anniversary Sunday. Do you think the museum is a bright spot for Castle?
I think without question, not only is Castle Air Museum a bright spot for Castle, the Castle Air Museum is a very, very bright spot for this entire county.
Mm-hmm.
We often, I think, take for granted assets in our community, because we live here. We need to be mindful that you take a look at the Castle Air Museum. It's one of the if not the finest outdoor air museum in the country. It's certainly right there at the top of the list. And that's where you have to take a step back, and you need to realize that our air museum here in Merced County, the Castle Air Museum, is the result of a great deal of hard work and effort and dedication by a number of volunteers who spend hundreds upon hundreds of hours restoring these aircraft so that people all over the world can come to our county and our community to actually take a look at these aircraft. And so, obviously, as they come up to their 30th anniversary, this is where I think all of us owe a great deal of thanks and gratitude towards, not only the existing leadership of this organization, led by Mr. Prusso, but then also, obviously, all of those folks in years past who helped make this facility, a reality today, people like Cliff James and others who have literally spent, again, hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of hours, turning that facility into a facility that not only we can be proud of, but that people around the globe can come visit.
Okay. And that's another thing. Do you think people come to tour the museum and notice the potential of Castle Commerce Center?
Well, I tell you what, we certainly hope. And I can tell you that as a part of our marketing activities, of course, we often use places like the Castle Air Museum as an example of what our community has to offer. So I do think that as you have people who come and visit the Castle Air Museum, and hopefully they'll take a look on the other side of the fence and realize mm-hmm. that Castle Commerce Center and Castle Airport is a location that is ready to do business. It's a place that has great potential. We may have our challenges, and I think we have to recognize those. But at the same time, I think the benefits of Castle, far outweigh those challenges. And obviously, because they do have people, meaning the Castle Air Museum does have people come and visit throughout the course of the year from all over the world.
Right.
It certainly has the potential to open up a few doors for us that otherwise perhaps wouldn't be open. We as a community continue to coalesce and come together and fight for the things that are most important and be proud of what we do have.
Mm-hmm.
We often get mired down with all the things that seem overwhelming.
Right.
But if we continue to coalesce as a community and work together between the public and the private sector and nonprofits like the Castle Air Museum, we ultimately are going to be positioned much better.
You're listening to Off the 99, a weekly radio broadcast brought to you by the Merced Sun Star and KYOS 1480 AM. We can be heard weekly at 6 p.m. Saturdays and 2:30 p.m. Sundays, or all the time at MercedSunStar.com. This show was produced by Amira Butt and Mike North. We'd like to hear from you. You can reach us at Off the 99 at MercedSunStar.com or by mail at 3033 G Street in Merced. This is Off the 99.